the likelihood is that the person with the most experience has not kept up with the technology and the trade. He's just coasting towards retirement. That's why I said 30, not 20. Because 20, they still have to learn, but at 40, they're ready to retire. They could care less. They're not going to go to school and learn anything else. They just do what they do at that point. But the guy just came out, is freshly trained. He knows all the latest techniques. And if it's a complicated procedure, then he is going to be the one you want. Okay? He may not have as much experience doing a lot of the routine stuff. So this guy with 40 years might be really good on a simple filling. But this guy can handle the, he'll know the latest techniques and the drugs to use and everything else. So what will happen is that someone with, trying to relate that to cells, someone with no experience is actually more trainable because they know they don't know anything. The guy with 20 years experience won't listen. So they never learn. They stop learning because they know everything. They're obsolete. What they learned was to always be closing either or insurance salesman close. Well, would you like that in blue or red? And if I can get this to you by Tuesday, do we have a deal? And what will it take to close you today? What will it take for me to put you in this car today? They learn all these stupid nonsense sales techniques that every consumer on the planet now knows, right? So as soon as they open their face, the consumer just looks at them in disbelief. I cannot believe this moron is going to use the either-or close on me. They just can't believe it, but the guy doesn't know any better. So in my opinion, no offense to anybody on the team, but if I had to say I'm going to take half my team and get rid of them, I'd pretty much take the older half and get rid of them. No offense. But statistically, I'd be better off. That's all I'm saying, statistically. And I'd be in the older half, by the way. Myth number five, people have to like you. People don't buy things from people they don't like. Well, here, I'll bust that myth wide open. I'm like the Mythbusters today. You like the Mythbusters? Anybody here watch PBS? You just got to watch sports all the time. Look at Paul Mush. Would anybody ever accuse me of being likable or nice? My kids certainly won't, and neither would my wife. Actually, I kind of am, but you don't know that because I'm acting all the time. But either way, while I'm working, I'm certainly not likable or nice. So for all practical purposes, I'm never likable or nice as far as my professional life goes. What I am, though, is a professional salesperson who gets deals done, okay? And I was always the top rep everywhere I was. And I never had that many friends. I didn't care. But I'm kind of driven, and, you know, I want to be successful, and that's how I close deals. And I'll venture to say that Andrea on one of our teams, she strikes me like that too. She doesn't strike me as nice, and that's probably why I like about her the most. But then there she's cranking down all these deals. What she's doing, she's demanding, and she's professional, and she's making deals happen. It just happens like that. But people want to believe that if they're nice, if they just can get other people to like them, then they'll survive because they have no technique and no training, no scientific methodology. Only thing they can go by now is their looks, their personality, try to ingratiate themselves with other people, try to get favors or political machinations and insiders and anything. They're grasping at straws trying to make a living. And they come up with that. I'll tell you something right now. A CEO is not going to sign a $1 million deal with you because he likes you. He may ask you to come by, do some golf. Play golf one day if he likes you. I'm going to safely bet that most of the time in past jobs, when you were at the top rep, people didn't like that person.
They didn't like him because they were doing what they wanted to do.
They were probably serious, driven, ambitious, had super high standards. They expected high standards of other people because that's what they expected of themselves. And that's not likable or nice. Oh, how you doing today? Oh, don't worry about it. It's okay. You were like, oh, don't worry about it. No. It's not the way they live. Next myth is extroverted. The back-slapping, glad-handing, life-of-the-party sales guy with, the gift of gab. There he is. There's Bob. Hey, Bob. How you doing? Hey. He's always talking, He doesn't listen. That's what you have to be. Now, that's a salesman, natural-born salesman. I just put a guy on one of my teams, again, had the good fortune to recruit, who is probably one of the best sales guys I've ever seen, who is completely the opposite of me. He's really low-key. He's really analytical. And he just sits on the phone all day long. He talks really soft. And he just sits there and cranks out deals one after another. It's the most amazing thing I've ever seen. As a matter of fact, I know this project's a success right now because I can literally take him and that project and fire everybody else and watch the sales come in and go land a beach. But he'll probably outsell everybody else put together like he did in the last job. And he's completely not an extroverted whatsoever. He's a nice guy, you know, you talk to him, how you doing? But he's real serious. Kind of guy you could tell he's got his own life, his own agenda. You know what I'm saying? He's out in his own head somewhere. He's not going to be the life of the party. He's not just not that gregarious. And I've seen the backstopping kind of guy that everybody likes in another company I worked for. After I got bumped up, that guy became number one salesperson. He was completely the opposite of me. Everybody loved this guy. He was a big sports fan. And he was cranking out deals left and right, too. He had a lot of charisma, and he used that to his advantage. And so I had more methodology, and I was real organized. He was completely disorganized, but he had a lot of personality and stuff as far as, like, he's a people person. And both my parents, by the way, are Sagittarians, and they're both like that. They're both, like, hundreds of thousands of friends. They have parties, hundreds of people show up. You know what I mean? I always laugh they're going to have to close down the city with one, you know, on the funeral because I probably have 5,000 people. I'll probably have four show up at my funeral. Three of them will be bill collectors. That was a joke.
Got me laughing.
Okay. So the idea of being introverted, extroverted does not correlate with reality. Understand the scientific method here. What I'm saying is that scientifically, if you look, if I analyze all the teams I've seen and reps and everything around me, I'm saying there's no correlation between being extroverted and being successful, between having a positive attitude and being. I've seen people with miserable attitudes, very pessimist. You know, optimist versus pessimist, by the way. If I backtrack a little bit on the positive attitude thing, I know a lot of salespeople that are complete pessimists, and they'll tell you I'm very pessimistic. I expect bad things. When good things happen, I'm surprised. 60 Minutes just has something about the Danes. In Denmark, they said they're the happiest people on the planet. They're in Denmark. And they went over, and everybody was sullen. Nobody would talk to anybody else on a subway. They're all looking down. They're all moping. And the reason was that Denmark was screwed around with every country on the planet, going there and take them over. They were always, you know, conquered by other people and all these bad things that had, they were beaten down so many times throughout history that their expectations are extremely low. So if anything good at all happens, they automatically become in a good mood. Oh, look at that, something good happened. But they never expect it, so they're never disappointed. And they have complete socialism, national health care, everybody gets paid, whether or not they work or not. And they have no disparity of income, and there's only 5 million of them in the whole country. So it's real easy to maintain that. Whereas we have 300 million, ain't going to happen here. But, I mean, that's literally what it was. But they're not happy. They're happy only because their life was a little bit better than their most miserable outcome they projected. You know what I'm saying? Anybody that looks at these people and say they're complete pessimists, and they are, but they're successful. So you figure that one out. Number 7, the customer is always right. No, he's not always right. The customer can be a complete jerk and an ass. Deserves to be booted out the back door, okay? The customer is not always right. The customer, as a matter of fact, is often wrong. You're going to call up, look, I can help you recover possibly hundreds of thousands, not millions of dollars from tax credits you failed. If I know you can't, but we don't need that. My other accountant already did it. I'm sure he's already got it. We already got that covered. But we don't need this software. We're fine the way it is with paper and pencil. We don't need to do anything. Even though China's taken over the planet and you're not competing, you're competing on a global stage and you're losing, but no, you don't have to invest in new technology for your business. I mean, they're almost always wrong because they don't know what you know. If you're selling something they legitimately need and they don't understand it, then they're wrong. Until they're only right when they agree with you, if you're more right than them, okay? That's a weird statement. You have to tell them, look, you may be a smart guy and you might have a successful business, but when it comes to this, you're wrong. And here's why. And the reason you got to be successful is because sometimes you have to say, hey, maybe there's something this guy knows that I don't. If I learn it, then I'll know what he knows, and I'll be, you know, I'll have the advantage he had. That's a smart businessman. The closed-minded ones are stupid. So who's more of an expert on the product or service, you or the prospect?
Me.
Is the patient always right? Doctor, I'm sick. I know I got colon cancer. I'm going to die. My uncle had colon cancer. You know, my cousin had it. I got upset stomach. I'm dying of colon cancer. I want an operation now so you don't have to remove as much of my guts later, you know? And he does an examination. The guy's got gas. He gets him some gas X. You got flatulence. Shut the hell up and get out of my office. Now, was the customer always right, or was the doctor right? I'm in the back of a plane. Pilot, turn left. Yeah, it's the better way to go around the storm stall, right? This guy's sitting in the cockpit with a clear view. He has weather radar. He's in touch with the National Weather Service and the control towers and blah, blah, blah. But some moron, after his third, you know, beer in the back, is going to tell him how to steer around the storm. So who should we listen to, you think? The customer who's sitting in the back of the plane, or the pilot? So what moron said that the customer was always right? And why do they keep repeating this idiotic statement? It's yet another myth, correct? You guys enjoying this so far?
Yep.
Okay, I'm trying to make this entertaining. All right. Number 8, make lots of calls. If you make lots of calls, you'll be successful. That's idiocy, and here's why. Let's say I say, you know, I want you to open the door there, so you decide to run out with your forehead, bam! You dust yourself off, go back, wham, hit it again, right? And so I want you to do it like another 300 times, because that'll be better. You'll get better results if you do it another 300 times. So if you do the wrong thing over and over again, the only thing you get good at is doing the wrong thing, and you get no better results. So making lots of calls in and of itself is not the key, right? To make water, you need hydrogen and oxygen, H2O. Two hydrogens, one oxygen, right? If you only have one, you have hydrogen, it'll blow up. Or you have oxygen, you can breathe it, but you don't get water. You have to have both. So here you have to have call volume and close ratio. So the idea that, let's say you have no technique, no training, no technology, no methodology, no science, just a bunch of gibberish slogans and euphemisms and affirmations and rah-rah pep rally speech nonsense. And he goes out, work harder, make more calls. Has anybody worked for an idiot like that who can't teach you anything but keeps exhorting you to make more calls? And every call is painful and unsuccessful, and the last thing you want to do is make more calls. So you develop a severe case of call reluctance because you get a negative reinforcement. Every time you pick up the phone, you get rejection, pain, embarrassment, humiliation, and disappointment. How many calls do you want to make now? So the idiot says, go out and make more. That's his solution. Well, just go make more calls. That'll take care of that. You have to have both call volume and close ratio. You have to have an effective call, and then it pays to make more calls. So I qualify that as a myth in that in and of itself. It's useless nonsense, and it's spewed out by countless sales managers across the country. Number 9, closers always win. It's obvious that the best closer always makes the most sales. Again, close ratio is only half the equation. The other equation is call volume. You can have the best close in the world if he doesn't pick up a phone. How many sales does he make?
Nothing.
Yep. I mean, it's very simple. The prima donna over there is now lazy, spoiled, doesn't want to make any calls. But he's a great closer, right? Then you get this guy over here, can't close the door, but he's cranking on the phone all day. Neither of them make any money. Neither of those guys are going to make any money. And then interlopers, I guess we already talked about this, is people come in and out of sales. They're laid off. They need money. They can't find a job. So they try, I'll take a sales job, especially a commission sales job, independent contractor. They don't really think of it as a job. They think of it as, well, I'll just do this until I find a real job. Well, how much money you make? Well, I'm not making money. I'm on commission. Oh, you don't have a job yet. That's what people tell them. They're embarrassed to say, I'm a commission salesperson. They're not embarrassed to say, I own my own business, which is exactly the same thing. I own my own business means you eat what you kill. You know what I mean? Unless you're a government contractor. And I put an example. I said, you know, can you imagine if anybody can just join the Army and they give you a rifle, so they're going to jump you off in a war zone. Okay, there you go. Here's a rifle. Here's a box of shells. How about it? What do you think is going to happen? Well, they'd never make it off the plane. They'd be knocking them off on the ramp on the way down. Okay, those are called interlopers. An interloper is a guy who shows up at the wedding and he says, well, who are you? He says, well, are you a friend of the bride's? No, I'm with the groom. And he tells the other person, no, I'm with the bride. In other words, he's crashing the wedding. He's an interloper. These are the people who come in and out of sales who are not really salespeople. And my advice to you Matter of fact, I plead with you to get out of sales. Leave us alone. Go away. The reason we can never be a profession is because all the interlopers come over here and piss in our pool. So by the time you make the phone call, every prospect's already been called by hundreds of idiots. So now all salespeople are idiots. They can safely assume, by the way, statistically, they're almost never proven wrong that all salespeople are idiots and crooks because of the zero standards that exist in sales. There are no standards. It's basically anarchy. And one of the hardest things about being sales is that's what you have to walk into. That's what they think of you before you even walk in. That's their mindset. So how are you going to overcome that? You get seconds to disassociate yourselves with all the rest of these salespeople, so-called. You know, you have seconds to prove that you're not just another telemarketer. And that's the basis of all of a lot of my training. Anybody enjoy this?
Yes.
Think it might be valuable to you?
It always is.
Okay. The reason being is that I'm trying to make conscious what you probably had in your head there somewhere from just kind of general knowledge or kind of vague understandings, and it's floating around. What I'm trying to do is nail it all down specifically all in one place and make it really clear so you're consciously now knowing this material instead of just kind of like, well, yeah, I kind of know that. Yeah, that's true. A lot of the idea here is just to put it down on paper and define it. That's half the problem. Now, if you're building a sales team or if you're looking at yourself or if you're not going to get trapped by any of these myths anymore, the whole attitude thing or what a closer is or, you know, relying just because you have 20 years means you must know things or you don't have to learn anymore and so on. You have to hold yourself to these standards. So does anybody have any myths? Oh, yeah. I have a bonus myth in here, but I think I already covered that as well. The best rep should be the manager. That was my bonus myth as far as my book goes, but I pretty much already covered that. So that's the worst thing. You could never make your best rep the manager, if at all possible. And then also what I mentioned here, too, is that the countless books, seminars, I mean, basically what you have out there is these, you know, two-hour seminars on sales, or how to cold call in an hour, or all these little books. I bought just hundreds and hundreds of these books, and they're basically all the same. It's like, you ever see dogs running around sniffing each other's ass? Hey, look, another dog. Let's stick my nose right up his ass. You ever see? How come they could do that, but I get arrested every time I try to do that? Hey! Anyway, here's what they do. You get all these sales trainers all stick their nose up each other's ass and say exactly the same stuff. They just keep repeating the same myths, all these myths. There's countless books on positive attitudes and psychology and all sort of nonsense and selling. And there's very little in the way of actual, you know, reproducible technique. There's a lot of religious stuff out there in sales, like Zig Ziglar eventually ends up talking about God and this and that. You know, I hate to tell you this, but God's not going to come down and close your deals, okay? Either as the Buddha or anybody else. You're going to have to close your own deals. I see a lot of that. I see a lot of, you know, pseudo-psychology, very little in the way of scientific method. And again, you can't have a profession without a scientific, you know, knowledge base, a basis of fact to work with. And some of the future lessons that I'll be dealing with will be how do you develop an actual methodology, and that's called a psychologically engineered sales process. And I'll be talking about that in a future session. Thank you for attending.